Be good.
Well, hey, hi, hello there. How are you? Welcome to the show. It's Andrew with the Monkey Tooth Podcast, bringing you a special episode today with my friend Brent Housingay. He is an artist and a sweetheart, a musician, a good dad. He was an all right waiter. I'd say okay. He was fine. Did fine. I was glad he was there. We met at a pizzeria in New Orleans a whole bunch of years ago, and I liked him immediately. We did all kind of fun stuff together when I worked there, and I really haven't seen him in, I mean, I haven't seen him at all, not really, just have not seen him in 9 years. And we caught up to talk about his life, his art, what he's doing, his being a dad. I have not met his kid, but I've seen him and his kid play music together, and it's fantastic. You're going to hear some of that at the end of the show here. But yeah, if you're in New Orleans this Saturday, which is when this episode is coming out, that would be February 24th. Go to Kitchen Sink in New Orleans. That's spelled weird, you know, fucking artists and galleries, they do that stuff. Kitchen, K-I-T-S-C-H, a big N with an apostrophe, sync, like synchronize, S-Y-N-C-H. Clever. But Brent's going to be there talking about art, talking about stuff. He's a good guy. Go see him. Yeah, that's this episode. Brent Housingay. Go to housingay.com. Buy a damn sticker. Buy a painting. Get your whole car painted. I'd like to. All right, what else? Tiffany and I are in Los Angeles on our way back home as this thing releases, if all goes well, unless something tragic happens, which I sure hope it doesn't, because this would be a terrible, terrible last note, me rambling into a microphone. So yeah, we hopefully enjoyed a show with Vera Sola in Los Angeles, and we have hopefully seen some friends. This is real dumb. I'm telling you about the past and the future. This doesn't make any sense. Hey, look, I hope you're doing well. I'm all right, in spite of whatever this sounds like. I'm fine. Brent's fine. Check him out. Brent Housingay. That's housingay.com. H-O-U-Z-E-N-G-A. And this is my conversation with him right now. Hope you're doing fun and interesting things. Until next time, adios.
Hey,
dude. How's it sound?
What's up, pal?
Nothing.
Yeah. I can't see you. Is that on purpose?
Oh.
You hiding?
I can't see you. Do I need to hit the video thing?
I don't know. Are you on your phone?
Yeah. Should I get on my computer?
Are you in the toilet?
No.
It's okay if you are, man. You won't be the first person to do it. Well, you good? Are you settled? You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
We've been recording this whole time. I feel like I should just leave the past 3 minutes in there because they were weird.
Hey, you know, maybe that would that would make for a great transition for people to just turn it off right away.
Yeah, they're like, oh, you know, I was wondering if I should turn this off, but now I know I've made the right choice with turning this shit off immediately. Well, dude, thanks for doing this. I'm sorry I didn't hook up with you yesterday. It was crazy. It was like, and I know, like, telling a person living in New Orleans that, like, oh, man, we're having storms and high winds doesn't really have the same impact as telling anybody else in the country.
You know, like, any weird weather, you know, you're not used to it. And if it's out of the ordinary, that's, totally get that.
I joked with you about it, like, turning nice, you know, as soon as we canceled and rescheduled for today. And it did exactly that. Like, it got nice for about the length of time that we would have been talking. It got like sunny. It was sunny and nice.
Yeah.
Anyway, here we are today.
Right on. Well, it actually worked out pretty good for me because, like, I don't know if it's just, I mean, part of it's like winter doldrums. Part of it's like recovering from Mardi Gras, I'm sure.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And then, like, I'm on day 3, no cigarettes today.
Oh, shit. What's the chances you're going to start cussing at me?
Very little.
Okay.
But yeah, yesterday, it would have been fine. We could have done it, but I'm feeling like a lot more energized and like getting shit done today.
Nice.
I'm sure you remember just like living here and like Mardi Gras, just no matter how much you participate, like it takes over your life.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no escaping it.
Yeah. Like it's like, you can't really concentrate on anything. Right. You might as well not be productive because it's not going to make a difference anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless you work in the Mardi Gras world somehow, you know, not the actual place Mardi Gras world, but like in the realm of Mardi Gras. It's,
right.
Yeah. No, it's bananas. I try to explain it to people who've never been. Yeah, they see like the Girls Gone Wild version of Mardi Gras on.
Right,
like,
that's what everybody thinks it is.
It's like, oh, it's just titties everywhere. It's like, no, it's actually like little kids and beads and, you know, yeah, there's a lot of drinking, but there's a whole other thing than just that wild.
Yeah, it's also very family friendly.
Yeah. Yeah, you learn a lot. I mean, man, you learn a lot as a family.
Right.
One of those things. Well, there's a whole ton of stuff, of course, that we could talk about, but you know, it's been 9 years since we saw each other in person.
Holy shit.
Like, how old is your kid? Your son is what? Like,
he's 8.
8. Yeah. He's not mine, so, right? He's not. Huh? He's not mine. We didn't make him. Right? You and I didn't.
Pretty sure he's not yours. Yeah. Wait, how could that be though? Cuz I still worked at Slice when we were pregnant.
But I was gone. I was already gone because I remember, I left in 2015, like January of 2015, I moved away.
Okay.
And I didn't know, I had no idea that, you know, that you were pregnant. I didn't know anything about it until years later. I was like, oh, look at this. Brent's got a kid. Brent's got a child. He yeah. made a person. So,
yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Congratulations on that.
Thanks.
8 years late. But yeah, we share kind of a funny past together. We met over pizza.
Yeah.
And the thing that I liked about you right away was your art. I got to know you after, but I immediately was like, this is some cool, weird shit. And I didn't have much of a platform. We just had walls that needed stuff.
Right.
And I liked your stuff the most. And you were like so open to the idea of storing your art on the walls, which just in retrospect now seems like such a shitty deal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is kind of, yeah. But like, I know that at least for me, like that's kind of how I got started. Like showing my stuff was like at coffee shops and, and stuff like that. And one other thing you might not know is like, I had only been here in New Orleans for about a year.
Yeah.
So it was actually like, it is kind of to hang your stuff in a restaurant that like might sell, they never pay you anything. Right. It is kind of shitty, but you know, at the same time for a person who was brand new to the city and I ended up working there.
Yeah.
It was a good like way for people to see my stuff. And like, since I was there, like I could talk to people about my stuff.
Yeah. Wasn't there like one dude who hated it? He like hated everything. He would complain about the music and he would like talk shit about the art and you were waiting on him.
Like a customer?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember this dude because, and this will make no sense to people who don't know what the hell we're talking about. But, so you and I worked for this pizzeria and, the people who own the pizzeria opened up a new store, a new restaurant. And, I was there on day one, like the night before had been another restaurant and we closed it down. And the next day we opened it up as a whole new place. And the very first dude that walked in the door was that guy who was always complaining about the music and complained about your art and all this shit.
He was remember that.
So it was me and the owner of the restaurant standing there at the bar and I was behind the bar and the guy walked in and I was like, nope. And I threw him out. Before he could even do anything, he couldn't pull out his wallet to order a drink. I was like, get out. He's like, what? I was like, this is not dollar one. No fucking way. You are a hex, a curse.
Well, that's a pretty bold, awesome move.
It was a bold move, but the owner was like, that was really weird, but I'm just going to go ahead and trust your judgment. Like, yeah, trust me, man. This guy, he's bad news. Anyway, sorry. I don't want to talk to you about all the stupid shit I've done. I want to talk to you about the stupid shit you've done.
Oh, well, let me get out my list.
Yeah. Where did you start doing stupid shit? Where are you from originally?
I'm from a small town in Illinois. I spent, I guess the first 12 years of my life in Thompson, Illinois, which is northwestern Illinois across the river from Iowa.
Okay.
It is a dinky town of 500 people, and that's where my parents grew up, and that's where they met, and their parents lived there, and then we moved just down the road to Fulton, Illinois, which is a little bit bigger of a town, and that's where I went to high school.
Fulton. Fulton. Were your parents artistic folks?
Yeah, I mean, not like outwardly. But they could both draw. I mean, my dad's a farmer.
Nice. Did you grow up on a farm?
I did.
Nice.
I mean, my parents were divorced, so half the time on the farm and half the time in town.
Nice.
But yeah, quite a bit of, rural upbringing. And then my mom's side of the family are like hunters. Nice. So yeah, hanging out on the farm and going hunting with my uncles and my grandpa. But yeah, they were both like, they could both draw. Like I remember, drawing farm scenes and drawing tractors with my dad.
Nice.
And honestly, one of my, I guess early successes, quote unquote, was the FFA, the Future Farmers of America, came to our classroom with a drawing competition. I guess I was in third grade and we were supposed to draw farm scenes. Well, guess what? I was practiced in drawing farm scenes. And I won $3 silver in this,
nice,
in this competition. And that was like, a early prideful moment.
Yeah. You still got those dollars?
No, I'm sure I took them to the arcade or something. but so that was one thing. And then, my mom could also draw and not outwardly, like she did it all the time, but she would do it with us. And, I remember like one of the other early things I would do was copy comic books.
Oh, nice.
And there was this, Aquaman picture that I drew, which is one of my best drawings at the time. All the muscles and, all the scales and shit in his costume.
Yeah.
but I couldn't do the hair. I was like, I didn't get this big swoopy long hair thing. But my mom helped me complete that part.
Nice. She could draw the hair.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Why? You usually hear about people not being able to draw hands or eyes or something like that, but...
Oh yeah, hands are weird too.
Hair was your kryptonite.
At the time, I guess, this long swoopy thing I had never done before.
What is Aquaman's kryptonite? Does he have one?
Really don't know.
Yeah.
I don't really know like a ton about Aquaman. I just know that for some reason I like him.
Sure.
Like I don't really read his stories or anything. I like the way he looks. I like his symbol.
Yeah, yeah, the pitchfork.
And I like that. Like I have several Aquaman hats. And I think the only reason I really like them is because nobody knows what it is.
And it's got like touch back to your farmer roots with the pitchfork thing that he carries around.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I mean, I don't know much, I guess, about Aquaman either, but he's one of those characters that, like, I think he's like got to be the most derided or made fun of superhero, right? Like,
yeah.
He's just but he can talk to animals. Like he's got a whole yeah. language of fish talk. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I think if I had a superpower, if I could communicate with even just my dog, never mind everybody else's dogs, I'd take that. I'd be thrilled.
That's pretty
with that.
Cool.
Yeah. Like I don't need to lift heavy shit. I don't really want to do that now.
Right.
But like
somebody would just put you to work.
Yeah. Like, hey, will you move my car? I can't parallel park. Fuck that. Like, or hey, can you tell me what's wrong with my dog? Yeah, I'll take that power.
Right.
All right. So you're on the farm and you're, was your mom in the city or still rural or what was?
Yeah, I was still rural, but she lived in town, you know?
And so they were encouraging you to draw. Did they think you would do something with it or they just liked the idea of you being able to express yourself or what do you think that motivation was?
No, I mean, I think it was more of like encouraging a kid, you know, yeah. like, oh, the kid's good at drawing. He likes to draw. Like that's good. But you know, as soon as I like wanted to do something with it, they were like, oh no, like we gotta be realistic. Like, what are you going to do with that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I won't sugarcoat it. Like I have like very much like a deep seated, like, I don't know, not anger, but like, I'm like, well, you know, you told me what I could be whatever I wanted to be. Like, why did you do that to me when I told you what I wanted to be?
Right.
You know?
Are you guys cool now? Or are you still working that out with your folks?
No, we're all pretty good. But nice. I would say it's still probably, you know, one of my main triggers.
Man, resentment's a hard thing, you know, to shake off. Especially like that little kid stuff, man. I mean, Jesus. It really sticks with you in a funny way.
And yeah.
I mean, you've got one now. I mean, do you ever think about that? Like, what little thing you might be unconsciously doing or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
That when he's absolutely 25, he's like, man, fuck.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's funny because obviously I want him to have a different experience, a different life. And I think I'm, you know, doing that. But,
oh, fuck yeah.
But also it's like, you know, as a parent, it's like, you're just going to end up doing your best and doing what you can. And like, and either way you're fucked.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Like, I mean, either way, they're going to have something.
But that might be part of the magic sauce, you know, if you don't. God, I was reading something the other day and the author talked about, it hit really close to the bone, man. He talked about like his relationship with his father and how that impacted him throughout his life. And it wasn't until he got older that he realized it was like I can't remember how he phrased it, something like a kind of like a burning resentment and a desperate need to please all these like male authority figures in his life that sort of stood in unconsciously as his father's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Why am I so stupid? How can I not be better at being a person? You know, but it's those types of things that you kind of need to realize about others and yourself and your parents and forgiveness and all this shit that is so extremely valuable, I think.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's a weird way to have to grow up, I guess. But I mean, I really like what you and your little guy do with the music.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
You guys play music together, which without like any of that Jackson 5 smacking the kid around type of shit. You know, like you just encourage each other and play music.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just to step back a second, it's like, I am grateful, like, as you, like, you're aware of it. Like, this, obviously, this writer is aware of it. So I am grateful to, like, have an awareness about this stuff and, like, where it comes from, at least. And, you know, hopefully that helps move forward. But yeah, like, Elijah's, my son, is getting a pretty early start at being creative and like, you know, watching me do everything that I do. So hopefully, you know, he has, you know, different ground to walk on when if he decides to go this route, you know, like we always kind of joked that because his mom's like sort of a hippie and I'm this like punk rock artist. We always kind of joked that like he would end up being an accountant or something.
Yeah. I've got a friend who was raised by hippie parents and he called their diet the macro neurotic diet. My friend is kind of a hippie, but his brother is like a very successful trader on Wall Street and just, you know, loves meat when it just that whole other route. But there's so many things to it. There's more than just like, hey, you know, you're going to reuse your creativity to make art or whatever. Like encouraging creativity to me is encouraging imagination, which is the bedrock of empathy. You know, empathy is a function of the imagination, and the best use of it, of imagination, is to put yourself in someone else's shoes or try to imagine what it's like to be them. You can be kinder. Mm. And you can be more creative in a way that's loving, which I think it's always a good idea to encourage creativity in people, whether it's, you know, whether you expect them to be able to draw or make music or any of it is immaterial to whether or not they have a foundation for appreciating the creativity of others and the capacity for creativity in themselves. And it sounds like at least your folks did that, you know, if they weren't happy with your choice of continuing a career in art, they at least helped engender in you like an appreciation for the great gift that is a creative life.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Well, speaking of that creativity of yours, where'd you go to? Did you go to university for this? Did you go to college for art?
Like the moron that I am, I'm saying that mostly because you say it all the time. I knew I wanted to study art and
you're saying I don't call you a moron. No, just to be clear.
You always call yourself a moron.
Yes, that's, of course. I just want to make it clear for anybody who's listening. I did not like work with Brent and call him a moron every day.
No, he said, what's up, boner?
Boner. I didn't call you boner. I wish I'd called you. Did I call you boner?
I'm pretty sure you did. That's where I got it. I call everybody boner.
That's hilarious. Man, I don't remember that. That's awesome.
I think so anyway.
I cracked myself up. Sorry.
But yeah, so I always thought I was going to draw comic books. And being, you know, from where I was from and like not knowing anything about anything, I just applied to the state school that my friend was going to. Oh, they have an art program. Like, I'll just go there. Hmm. And, you know, I show up for my first day. I get accepted to this one school that I applied to. And I, you know, they're like, well, what do you want to do? What classes do you want to sign up for? And I'm like, well, I want to draw comic books. And the fine art professor is like, well, we don't do that here. Like, this is a fine art department. So it was kind of great because, you know, I ended up studying graphic design and getting a lot of computer knowledge. But then I also, you know, studied fine art and printmaking and really opened up my eyes to a whole new world and probably wouldn't be doing, you know, the stuff I do now without that.
Yeah, you learned a lot of rules, a lot of foundational stuff.
And just like processes and stuff about the world and the art world.
There's something really funny and poetic and frustrating and telling about like your art was not good enough for your parents and then your art was not good enough for art school. It's like you have just persevered with art in spite of everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, really, pretty much. Like, I've always had this like DIY thing, you know. Like when I was in high school, you know, me and all my friends were into skateboarding and then it was punk rock and playing in bands and stuff. And there was no place for us to play or anywhere, you know, so we had to just like do it ourselves. Yeah. And put on our own shows and, you know, make our own flyers. And then not only that part of going to college, but then I also went to college in this like podunk Illinois town that had no culture.
Oh, man.
You know, where'd it's you like where'd I didn't do Western Illinois.
That's the name of the university.
It's in Macomb, Illinois, which is like there's nothing. I mean, literally, I should have done a little research.
There's a school and that's it.
There's a school. Yeah. Dairy and Queen. There's some bars, but like, you know, no bands came through town. Yeah. There was literally not much. So I had to do it again, you know, and throw my own shows. And, I made my own magazine to like promote the culture there.
That's awesome.
So where, it might have been hard, but also it did give me like this real like training to like take this do it yourself thing and you can go anywhere with it.
Now, when I met you, you had already discovered the trove of images that have been sort of like the backbone, I guess, if that's fair to say, of so much of your work. Can you tell me that story?
Yeah. So, right when I was about to graduate from Western, this would have been 2006, I was out for a jog and found these photo albums from the 1890s in someone's trash.
Trash.
Yeah, like there was, you know, there was obviously trash cans, but then there was like some boxes and this red book was on top of one of these boxes. And, really weird. This continues to be like sort of my central, like origin story as an artist. I took these books home and like, even being out for a jog, I'm running with these two books under my arms and kind of feeling weird about it, you know, like I'm not supposed to have them or like I stole something or I don't know. But I took them home and I'm like, you know, flipping through all these pages of all these images and kind of just like sad that, you know, someone threw them out.
Yeah.
So there was definitely like an empathy thing happening. But the part I like to tell people about, I guess, mostly is like, it also felt like this blip in time. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, they're from the 1890s. It's about 100 years ago. But really, it's just like a blip. 100 years is like a blip in the whole.
It's nothing.
It's nothing. And then I thought about like my lifetime, and like I had been just going to school for 4 years with everybody in my family, like, and not even family, but like friends and stuff too. Like, dude, what are you gonna do with art and stuff? And like, I get it, like from where I'm from, like,
sure.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do with it there. But so it was kind of like, well, what do I want to do with my life? Like, I only have so much time too.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like the origin of finding them. And then I had also just started to be interested in like using found objects to make art. Like one of my professors, Terry Rathje, he was one of my graphic design professors, but he's really super talented artist. He did a lot of like found object work, and then and my sister was also painting on found windows.
Oh, that's cool.
And I don't exclusively paint on windows, but for like the first 5 or 6 years of my career, like that was kind of what I did. And she had given me a couple found windows and, you know, I had picked up like a few just like weird, interesting objects before I found this like sort of explosion in the photos.
Nice. Well, before I get into like your process and what you specifically do with it, I kind of want to linger on this like time capsule that you ran into. There's this cemetery not far from where we live that like sort of spills over down this hill. And most of the cemetery is pretty well kept. You know, it's like you can see the names on the graves and all that stuff. But there's like this little forest bit that a little trail goes through. And there's just like headstones knocked over that are, I mean, not even that old, like 100 years old, you know, that they have not been visited by a family member. Or, you know, the trees have knocked them over. They're just, I mean, they're little more than a, I don't know, piece of debris in a forest that doesn't really belong.
Right.
And it's the forest that doesn't belong, oddly enough. It's like eucalyptus, which doesn't, it's not native to this area. But anyway, like to walk through that and see, you know, that in the span of a lifetime, these people who lived a lifetime have been entirely forgotten. Mm-hmm. And that they're, everything that they gave a shit about, all the things that stressed them out, that they got excited about, the food they cooked, the everything, the trips they took, it just added up to like a weird shaped stone in a forest that some idiot from Mississippi is like, oh, look at that. You know, like,
yeah,
it's such a bizarre thing. So for you to have found these people's faces and images is what it is, right? It's like, it's mostly just portraits of people in like nice, kind of nice dress. What looks like looks nice to me, frame of reference. I don't know. Maybe it's just like normal clothes. Maybe they made them themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I think at that time, you know, people would get dressed up to the nines to get, it was an event to get your picture taken.
Yeah. Yeah. So like to see those and for you to like somehow breathe a little life back into them and make them so colorful and like representative of so many different things that your art can do, I think is, there's something magical about it. And it's also like, it's also in a way its own sadness. I don't know if you ever experienced any of that, because it is, it's hard to describe art on a podcast, but like your art is very joyful and it's got this like kind of frenetic tension and between gladness. But one thing I can always feel in it is the sadness of this thing. I mean, part of it's knowing the story. For some reason, I thought you found it at a store, but now knowing that it's garbage is even more tragic.
Yeah.
Like, you know, seeing these just long dead faces and everything they tried to do, it's like, nope, you're just in a sticker. Now you're part of a piece of art. You know, like, I don't know. There's something weird about it that I really love.
I mean, it is weird. And like some people don't really get it, don't really connect to it. But yeah, I think, I mean, one thing that I hadn't thought of till probably, you know, 10 years into doing it was like the fact that they were thrown out and is like kind of like how I felt.
Yeah.
So I didn't connect that for a long time.
You felt thrown out? You felt thrown out? Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Because of how my family reacted to me wanting to be an artist. And
right.
Obviously this is 20-year-old feelings now.
Yeah.
but yeah, I mean, there is definitely just like a sadness in their stare and in their face. But I guess it's also like, yeah, I don't know, just like we get to be alive now. So I guess it's sort of like that's part of the joy in it.
Yeah, it is part of the joy in it. But there's something to think about, like in that, I was writing about this morning, that the idea of the rate of change in human culture, you know, and that like my great grandmother was probably closer in age to those people in those photos than certainly to us. And like, you know, what she would have experienced, just, I was thinking about her in the context, I had to fly to a funeral for my uncle, and like just being on an airplane.
Yeah.
Where like most of the people kind of look like they're in their pajamas and everybody's staring at these little computers that are feeding them bad news on purpose. It's like, what type of horror show is this relative to a person from that era? And maybe it's good that our lives only last 80 years or so, you know, like, because otherwise it would be just too much, you know, to just see that rate of change. And like, so now thinking about your, you know, over 100-year-old gone subjects, like as they are now, so shall we someday be, right? Like we will eventually be those long dead people, and the rate of change, you know, what is it that we're not going to see? You know, what sort of horror show awaits, you know, your son's children, you know, like God, you know, it'll be maybe fine for them, but for us, it would just be like this unbearable weirdness.
Yeah, it's crazy. And yeah, that's one thing to think about is like how different these people's lives were.
Oh yeah. Like, did they ever see anything other than like flowers that were as colorful as the art that you make out of them? And it like,
I mean, that's for certain. Like everything was gray, right?
Well, just nothing in the house ever had that many colors, you know, like just, it would have been like garish or crazy or, you know, like only some, you know, weirdo from South America would ever dare to have that many colors in their house.
Right. Yeah.
So let's talk about your, if you don't mind, your process, like what you do with these images. Cause it's, I mean, it's when I encountered it, 9 years ago, it's certainly evolved and become more complex and more interesting, but the basics of it are relatively the same, right? Like the way you make what you make. So can you explain what you do?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a consistency about it where, you know, the first ones I ever made in 2006 could still be in a show with something I made this week. You know, like you could still say, oh yeah, that's the same person that made that. Excuse me. But yeah, so I mean, it starts with like looking at these photos. And I think an important note to make is sort of like the synchronicities I experience in life. Mm-hmm. Sort of seeing signs, you know, that kind of translates into this. And so a lot of times I'll sit down in the studio with my photos and I don't just paint from the found stuff anymore.
Right.
A lot of my newer stuff is from inspiring stories or, people that I end up reading about, or stories that I think need to be told. But yeah, for the most part, I'll sit down and sort of look through these photos. And a lot of times it'll be, you know, one of them will remind me of somebody or remind me of something, you know, that just happened. I'll give you an example. It's like, every year I celebrate the anniversary of finding those.
Yeah.
And last year in 2023, I get a message on the anniversary. You know, I don't like celebrate, like throw a party. I guess I have on the 10 year, I guess I did. But you know, I just like, you know, do a little thought process. And like last year I went and had a little art show around the bayou and like just left some paintings for people to find and look at.
Nice.
But this, 2023 on the anniversary, I get this message from my friend Don, who I knew from 06. I was working at a coffee shop. He worked at the state of Iowa and he would come in for coffee, and turns out he's a photo collector from this, you know, all eras, but like, you know, he had a ton from this era. And so we became friends over that, but I hadn't heard from him, excuse me, in probably 10 years or more. And there's no way he would have known that this was the anniversary day. Like, we weren't connected on social media or anything. Wow. But he sends me a message. Hey, Brent, I'm downsizing and, I've got some photos I could send your way. Like, I don't need any money. I just thought you would like them. Wow. So I get that message on the anniversary. And right. I'm like, well, that's a sink.
Yeah.
And he sends me the photos, and I think, you know, this is the first time I'm sitting with them and looking at them. And a lot of times it's just like, oh, this one looks like it would make a very good stencil. And that's like kind of how I work it. So, I've picked out maybe 5 or 6 of them and put them on my computer, and I'm looking at them. And I had read this short story by Philip K. Dick the night before. I'm very kind of obsessed with Philip K. Dick, and we can talk about that more later.
You have been for a long time. I think the whole time I've known you, you've been really into Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, well, I probably got really fascinated about the time that I knew you.
Yeah.
Or the time we met. And so I've got them on my screen, and there's a story he wrote, and I'm going to blank out on which one it was, but something about his past self speaking to his present self. Mm. And I think we might have talked about something like this before. But yeah, something about his past self speaking to his present self. And I'm looking at these photos, and I'm just kind of going back and forth thinking about that phrase, past self speaking to my current self. And I'm like, well, my past self is the one who knows Don. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Don has sent me these photos. And I'm still thinking about that. And this photo comes up on the screen. I'm like, oh, my God, this dude looks exactly like this guy I went to high school with. Like, it's not him, obviously, because this picture is 100 years old. Right. But, like, he's got the same face. And so that was kind of how I decided to use that photo. And sorry, this is a long way around to say I pick a photo to use. And then so then I'll take that photo and I'll project it and usually make a 3-color stencil or more, depending on how complicated the picture is.
Yeah.
Which is basically, you know, these photos are in grayscale, and a grayscale photo can be like, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of different shades of gray. Basically, I'm breaking it down into like 3 shades of gray: white, gray, and black.
Mm-hmm.
which can be used with color too, as you can see in my process. But then I take that stencil, and a lot of people who make stencils, like, that's what they do. They make the stencil, they spray the stencil, and that's the art. But the stencil in my work is always just like a tool as part of my painting process. So it's one of the components. So I use the stencil. I do a lot of scribbling. I use a lot of tape to make layers.
Like a shitload of tape. Lots and lots of tape.
Yeah, you should see. I've been in this house since 2020. And I think I've been collecting almost all of the tape. I have a little garage carport thing that we don't use.
I was going to ask if you had a tape ball.
Yeah, it's huge.
Nice.
It's a monster. It's a tape monster.
I need a photo.
I'll send you one. So after that, I mean, really, I try to just be as free as possible and try to experiment. Obviously, like, I have a bunch of like moves that I do and like, you know, processes that I know work. But I kind of like to sabotage myself during the process sometimes by like, you know, just making it look ugly or like using colors that I don't like. Yeah, just to like kind of see what'll happen. And, you know, obviously I'm interested in depicting people, and especially if I'm trying to tell someone's story, I want the image to be clear. And, you know, but I'm also very interested in abstracting the figure.
Right.
And so I have a bunch of different ways that I kind of, you know, make the figure shine through the abstraction, but still like become part of the abstraction.
Yes.
And my thought on that has always kind of been like, you know, our bodies are just like these temporary vessels. Like if you think about, if you read One Way or the Other, like if you go down to the microscopic level, like past the microscopic level, like everything is energy. Everything is made of the same thing.
Right.
And if you go like out into the universe, it's like, oh, well, everything is made of stardust. And so we're not really, we think we're separate from the world and from the universe, but we're really a part of it.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I like to, what I'm really interested more than making a portrait is like trying to convey that idea with a portrait, with a person, like.
Right. Yeah. It's just energy sort of expressing itself in the form of Brent or this 1800s figure.
Yeah. This person. So that's the sort of one thing.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean,
it's certainly one thing. It's a whole lot of things. I mean, your art is like, I love it, man. I've been a fan since right away, but there's a vibrancy to it that it's more than just colorful. And I'm no art critic or smart person, but there's like there's a story element of it that you don't know. I mean, you just see a human being who clearly, for whatever reason, no matter how many layers of stuff are on top of it, you just know that that is an old person.
Yeah.
It's a person who is not around, and especially the old ones. But I mean, or I guess only the old ones, but it's like the story that comes through in those paintings. And I don't know if it's because I know some of the backstory or if I would see this, if you know, coming from left field, but I feel like your story and the story of these people and the impact of the art are all better off with the other. You know what I mean? Like the more you know about it, the cooler it is, which
yeah,
it's almost the inverse of like celebrity culture. Cause the more you know about a celebrity, it's like, oh, that's just a dude and he's kind of a dick and
right.
Whatever.
Right.
But this, the more you know about it, the richer the experience and the better. The
yeah, well, I like that you say that about like the celebrity thing, because you know early on it was like, you know, there was this whole movement that kind of came with street art and like pop art resurgence, you know, and everybody's painting Marilyn Monroe and mm-hmm. like painting these famous people and like, you know, pop icons, people that I really don't give a fuck about. And also I don't like that like type of culture. Like I don't like to I mean it's one thing to admire someone, but it's another thing to sort of have this like celebrity worship thing.
Yeah.
Sure. And so this was actually that another part of it was kind of this like this was my way of making the art that I want to make without being a part of that.
Yeah. But it, and it you doesn't, know, like, it doesn't delve into worship in its way, you know, even though you are, or iconography even.
Yeah.
It's sort of like in a weird way, transcending iconography, even though it is a picture of a person, you know?
Yeah. But hopefully it represents something else. But yeah, but then also that is like another part of what you were saying about the stories, their story and my story and whatever. It was like there is a sense of like wondering what's going on here, like who is this person? And so it does kind of like make the viewer ask questions.
Yeah.
And especially because they're used to seeing this sort of work depicting right. famous people.
And
so like one of the big questions early on was like, is that Lincoln? And like none of them look like Lincoln at all.
Right. Right.
But for some reason, because they're from that time period and because people just don't know what else to think, that was the question they asked.
Isn't it funny? Like the human brain, like in the dark, will turn all kinds of shapes into people, into dangerous animals. Like our brain is, you know, geared around helping us survive and helping us identify patterns. So like there's a new overlay in that evolutionary code where we start just ascribing celebrity or well-known patterns to things that are not that, you know, like yeah. if someone would see Lincoln just because that's their one cultural touch point to that era, it's got to be some sort of new evolutionary tick in us.
It's weird.
It is weird. Now, you know, almost nothing about these people, right? There's some, you've gotten some feedback from people like, oh my God, that's my great grandfather. Didn't you get some of that, or am I making that up?
Yeah, well, these original photos and most of them, like there's a few names on a couple of them, but other than that, like I have no idea who they are. You know, a few times I've made attempts to like contact local historical societies from where they're from and stuff, but like it's really hard to figure anything out if you don't have a name.
Yeah.
But so yeah, actually right around the time that we met, I had painted this had been the first time that I had found a photo at a junk store and brought it home. And at the time I was crushing on one of my coworkers, and I went to Baton Rouge to a friend of mine now, I was going to meet him for the first time, runs a mural program there.
Oh, nice.
So I was going to Baton Rouge kind of on a whim to meet this guy, you know, to do some networking, and I went to this junk store, and the chick working there really reminded me of this coworker that I was crushing on. And then I went to another junk store before I went to meet him, and I found this photograph. I'm like, oh my God, that looks just like this, you know, friend of mine that I'm coworker that I'm crushing on. And so I bring the photo home. It was like a dollar. I was like, oh, I'll give it to her. But I brought it home, and I'm living with roommates at the time. And, you know, they're all sitting around smoking blunts and shit. And I'm just like mesmerized by this photo. Like, oh, like some reason this photo has got me vibrating. And so, I guess I have to paint it. And these might have been the first paintings I put up at Slice St. Charles. Mm-hmm. So I painted this woman several times. And I think within a week, or it wasn't very long, I get this email, picture of my mom, ? And the lady says, hey, we were eating dinner with my family. I looked up, I could swear that's my mom's sophomore year photograph. I mean, could that be? Like, I read your story about finding your found photographs. And I wrote back, this picture did have a name on it. It said to so-and-so from Sandy Bates on the back. So I said that to her. Well, it's got this inscription on the back. Is your mom Sandy Bates? She said, yeah, my mom's Sandy Bates from Baton Rouge.
Incredible.
And so that was, yeah, that was a very intense synchronicity.
Yeah. Which, wait, can you tell me, or do you have to tell me offline who you were crushing on?
No, you remember Erica?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The punk rock in
Everybody
the kitchen.
Everybody liked Erica.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome. Hey, you got good taste, man.
Yeah. Well, nothing ever happened, but I did get this story out of it.
That's great. That's the best. That's the best. Uh-huh. Sandy Bates. Man, that there's something so weird about that. Like people, when those types of things come back to you, you know, you've put something out there in the world and then suddenly the ways in which people identify with things, you expect it to be more abstract, but for someone to literally identify and be like, oh, hey, that's my mom.
You know, they
just happen to sit under the picture of their mom.
It's
so wild.
Really crazy.
You do have a lot of oddball synchronicity in your life.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, that's what I live for.
Yeah, I can imagine. So you've done mural stuff, you've traveled around, you've got things in galleries, you sell art, you sell stickers, you sell, do you get commissioned to paint cars or do you just do that because like what's,
yeah, how are you making it? People will come up and ask if I'll paint their car.
That's awesome.
I mean, it is like a form of advertising, so.
Oh, yeah.
It's usually like sliding scale type thing. You know, if somebody's got a beater car that they want to revitalize for a minute.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do try to get paid for that.
Yeah, you should. Tiffany was always, when we were getting, we got this crazy van that we traveled around in. She's like, let's go to New Orleans and get Brent to paint it.
Yeah.
Yeah. People already hate our van enough because it's big and red and we're in like in a fancy area and we're not fancy. Like I can only imagine if we showed up and it had your crazy painting.
Oh, they'd probably like it more.
Yeah. They'd be like, oh, we definitely got to get these fucking assholes out of our neighborhood. No.
Just knock on wood. I'll just tell you though, I've never really been hassled for having, my painted van.
Well, you're in New Orleans. You're in a much, more.
Even in the Midwest.
Yeah. Well, there's something, there's a weird snobbery here where I live, which I'll take this opportunity to rail against it because fuck it. we live in the same valley that like Janis Joplin lived in our neighborhood and Jerry Garcia lived in our neighborhood.
And, yeah. I think Philip K. Dick lived over there for a while too.
And, you know, like these creative luminaries, oddballs, misfits, they like some of the people, I forget the name of these brothers. They were like famous porno guys that filmed like Behind the Green Door. And, they had a connection to this neighborhood and I met this old lady. There's still a few people left in this place where I live that are like still hip and still cool, but they're old, you know, and they sort of regret how posh it's become around here.
Right.
She was telling me that like her husband had been a dentist and allowed a porno to be filmed in his office. And it was called The Gums of Navarro, which I thought was so fucking brilliant. It's like, wait, how can you be upset with my red van? And this is the place right. where that produced such titles as The Gums of Navarro. Anyway, that's one thing that we really do miss about New Orleans is the quality of people and the types of friends you make and this, the laid back attitude toward creative expression is so free and accepting and, you know, like, I don't know. I do miss that quite a bit. I don't miss mosquitoes.
You're too close to San Francisco, man.
I know. But it's
which sucks to say, but like, yeah.
It's so pretty. Like it's really, really pretty.
And there's I gotta come out there.
It's not that it's all shitheads, but there's like really lovely people. I mean, there's shitheads everywhere you go. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is. There's just not the same warmth of character that there is in New Orleans. That's, yeah, you got to weigh things. Pick your poisons, I guess. But you've been there for a long time, 10 years now, huh?
12.
12. Jesus.
Yep.
And your little guy, does he identify as a New Orleanian? He feels pretty at home. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think he definitely has his own attitude and sort of opinion about things. But yeah, this year was really cool. He wanted to participate a little more in Mardi Gras and stuff.
Cool.
So that was cool to see.
I bet. Well, so where can people find your work? Where's the best place to send people?
So my Instagram is my last name, Housingay, and that's, you know, a great name to say over the radio.
Yeah.
but it's Housenga. And my website is the same. Did I just say that? Instagram? My Instagram and my website are Housenga. And that's my last name.
Yes. All right. I've always amazingly pronounced your last name correctly. And I don't know why.
Wow.
It's not in my wheelhouse to normally pronounce last names correctly. What is that anyway? What's the origin of your last name?
It's Dutch.
Dutch? Nice.
You'd be surprised. Yeah, that is incredible, though, because nobody pronounces it correctly. And I usually don't correct people either.
Yeah. Well, my last name, Couch, you'd be surprised at how often that is completely fucked up. I get
it. Yeah, well, yeah, they look at it and they're like, well, it couldn't possibly be exactly what it looked like.
Ever do that to a family. Like, Couch. I get Crotch. I get Cooch. I've gotten Couch with an N. I've gotten so many hilarious mispronunciations. I want to support what you're doing in every way possible. I want to encourage everybody that I know to see your stuff. And are you still writing? Have you been working on your writing at all?
Not so much. You know, when we talked about it, I definitely like revisited it and was kind of like doing some editing and like getting a little excited about it. But, you know, then other projects come up and get in the way. But I will say that my book dreams have really been coming true recently.
Yeah.
I just had this show at Antenna Gallery and they have a press that's attached to their operations. So they made a whole catalog of my artwork.
Nice.
In book form. So that's really cool. And then within the same week, I was on the cover of Anti-Gravity's Mardi Gras issue.
Oh, that's awesome.
With the wraparound cover.
Yeah.
And then also had a book cover, which is a collection of short stories. That was released the same week as the Anti-Gravity.
All right. There's some synchronicity coming around you and books.
Yeah, definitely. So, I'm hoping, you know, some more stuff like that happens. And, I definitely still believe and want to work on my writing. It's just kind of like, I think most of that hit me and came out of me all at once.
Yeah.
Not all at once, but like, you know, in the same period of time, was kind of like,
yeah, you're in that next phase, which is the hardest part, which is the one that so many books don't ever make it over. So I will continue to encourage you to find a way over the hill.
Yeah. So I'll definitely be revisiting it and hopefully making it into something.
Well, you are a gifted storyteller in a very unconventional way. And
thank you.
I think you've got a lot to share, and I'm glad to know you. I'm glad to be in your orbit, even as far out as I am.
Yeah,
cold satellite that I may be is it's cool to know that you're out there doing it and making good stuff, man.
Yeah, you too, man. I'm almost through with your book.
Oh shit, and we're still friends. Nice.
But yeah, it's been nice. I love the short stories because it's kind of like, okay, I can do one or two or three or four and put it down for a second, you know, and then hop back into it, you know? So yeah, I'm almost done.
It asks very little investment of the reader.
Yeah, but it's good. I'm really enjoying it.
I appreciate that, man. I had a weird...
And also, it's also great, like, since you have the podcast, I've listened to quite a few of your episodes and listened to you reading some of the book. And so you have this great radio voice. And so when reading it, it's kind of awesome to have that voice, like reading it to you.
Oh, that's cool. Nice.
You know?
Yeah, I had a funny, maybe you can identify with this in a way. You know, I live in a very expensive place. Fucking everything is expensive. And I got a bowl of pho, like Vietnamese soup, the other day. And it was a 15 or 20 cents more than my book in paperback.
Right.
And I was like, man, I sat down and I was like looking at the thing. I was like, fucking hell, this is just future poop. Like, I mean, I love food. Right. I love soup, but it's just future shit. You know, I'm just going to burn it and turn it into poop. It's like my book is worth less than shit.
Yes, I definitely relate to that. Cause I'm like, but also with just rising costs and stuff recently and like, going to the grocery store, me and my son, I just wanted to make dinner for last night. And I don't think I bought anything extra. I think I bought a loaf of bread so I could make his lunch. I spent over $40 on dinner to make it home.
Yeah, just for a couple dudes. Not like fancy.
Just for a couple dudes.
Yeah.
And yeah, so when I am thinking about like what to price my stuff and whatever, I'm like, well, a t-shirt for $25 seems reasonable. Like that's what I've always been paying my whole life for a t-shirt. But like, not anymore. Like, not if a soda costs $5.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Right.
I don't drink soda. Right. But you know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. It's
insane.
Yeah, it is insane.
It's definitely a weird thing to consider when pricing something because obviously you want to move your stuff. And you want it to sell. Right. Like, I can't just sit here and look at this pile of t-shirts, which is something that does happen sometimes.
Sometimes.
Or these books. But, like, you also got to, as an artist, that's something I have to do. I've had to do my whole career is just, like, define my own worth.
Right.
And sometimes I've done it several times where I'm like, well, it's time to just raise my prices. Like, I don't care what anybody thinks. I'm raising my prices.
I believe in it.
Yeah.
I like that we've had, probably because of me, two kind of old man-ish conversations in this chat that I complained about my neighbors and then the rising cost of goods.
It's true. It's so true.
It underscores that it's been a decade since we hung out that I've turned into this crotchety old man bitching about these things. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I could say the same thing about, you know, New Orleans and raising or the skyrocketing prices of real estate and rentals here.
Thank you, pal. I'm a big fan of you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man.
And just awesome to chat.
Indeed. Cheers, buddy.
We can do that anytime.
Yes. We don't have to record it.